My name is Anita Charging. My native name is Blossoming Peppermint Hishuhabarish. I am tribally enrolled with the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation. I have lived in Mandan, though, for about the last 33 years, Bismarck Mandan area. I'm divorced, and I have three children. My oldest is Nathan. He's 34. My daughter, Brianna, is 27, and my youngest daughter, Larissa, is 19. Okay. I have two grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My educational status is I have a bachelor's degree in social work from at that time it was Mary College,
mm-hmm.
and I have a master's degree in management from the University of Mary.
Okay.
Currently, I work at United Tribes as an academic and personal counselor.
Mm-hmm.
As of this month, though, April, I am celebrating being a social worker for 30 years. So mm-hmm. I've held many different job titles in those 30 years.
That's a long time. That's great. And you said the bachelor degree was in social work?
Yes.
Okay, that sounds great. So, Anita, you said that you lived in Mandan for the last 33 years. Prior to that, where did you grow up as a child?
Grew up in Whiteshield, North Dakota, which is on Fort Berthold.
Okay.
Graduated from Whiteshield.
Okay.
Just was a little res girl growing up.
And so did you grow up out in the country? Or were you on the reservation, like in the housing area?
Right. I grew up in BIA housing.
Okay.
Right in Whiteshield. I lived right across from the school.
Oh, okay. And it's the same school that's there today?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, although we are getting a new school.
Mm-hmm.
Whiteshield's been around since about 1953, 54,
mm-hmm.
and it's been the same school, so they are getting a new one. So.
Oh, good. And they have a community center there now,
They have
too.
A community center. They're getting a new one. There's mm-hmm. A lot of building activity going on.
Okay, good. And so share with us a little bit what it was like being a child growing up in Whiteshield.
I had a really pretty good childhood when you compare it to what, you know, a lot of kids on the reservation grow up with. Both of my parents were not alcoholic.
Hmm.
You know, I remember my dad having a beer now and then, but I never saw him drunk. My mother never drank.
Hmm.
So we grew up pretty. You know, I can't really say anything bad about my childhood. We did all the normal things. I used to dance when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
I would hold my great-grandpa Joe Pacino's hand, and we would walk. He would dance with me around. At that time was the Big Top. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a Bowery.
Okay.
It wasn't all the razzle-dazzle you see in powwows now. It was more sedate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I went to school. I loved my summers. I looked forward to the bookmobile coming,
mm-hmm.
you know, outdoor camps, campfires. We would, because my grandparents were still alive in Twin Buttes, and my grandpa did sing at the drums, so we would go to a powwow, mostly the ones just on the reservation, Newtown,
mm-hmm.
Twin Buttes, Mandaree. We would go with them because my grandparents would be camping.
Okay.
Like I said, summer was the most fun time because you just left the house in the morning. You only really came back to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night, school was, you know, I was a pretty good student. So, you know, kind of nothing really much with, you know, my school studies was in activities. I think my best memory is the year I was a senior, the year before they had reorganized girls basketball. And in the fall of 1974 was the first reorganized girls basketball tournament in years.
Oh,
and Whiteshield made it to state that year.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so our team, I was a senior on the team and one of the starters, so it was huge. And that's probably my biggest and best memory from high school was going to the state basketball tournament.
And was that for boys, too? I mean, they had boys basketball.
Oh, yeah. Boys had always been going on.
Oh,
but
that.
Girls,
okay.
years ago, had been organized. But then it kind of fizzled out, and it was just starting to come back and be organized about the time I was ready to leave high school.
Oh,
but I did make that last.
That's healing.
Yeah.
That is. Yeah. That's great. So, good childhood overall, just mm-hmm. good memories.
Yeah, pretty good memories.
Because, you know, personally, myself, and then others, just other people that I know who grew up on the reservation, they don't always have such a, you know, such a good life growing up. And whether it's something, you know, they were exposed to by their parents or they brought in themselves into their own family. So that's good. So as you graduate and then you start making some adult decisions about what's next, and can you start sharing with that?
Well, when I graduated, I went to school at NDSU for a year. Did not make very good decisions. I think one thing my parents probably maybe could have done better for us was to let us be more independent with our decisions. But they kind of, you know, hovered over us. And so I didn't know how to use all that responsibility I had when I got to college. And yeah, at the time, it was only 18 to drink in Minnesota. That was their legal drinking age back then. So yeah, we had a good time going across the border. And NDSU was on quarter systems, not semesters. I made two quarters and flunked out the third. Yeah, so not the best decisions. I think one of the worst memories I have at NDSU was were two. One, I came off a little reservation school. There was only 13 in my graduating class. And I went into a freshman class at NDSU that I was just a number. And I wasn't prepared for that. The other thing was there was a boy who kind of took a shine to me there. And he was non-native. But had some, and had friends, and one of his friends seriously opposed him seeing a native girl. And for the first time in my life, I was called a squaw.
Oh, and this was in college?
Yep, in college, my first year. I was 18 years old, and it just, at the time, it just blew me away, you know? With all my life experiences now, you know, I just would have went at him double-barreled now, but back then I just was pretty naive and just blew me away to be called that.
So what was your response to that? I mean, if you've never prepared yourself prior to this, you couldn't have possibly planned a response. So what was your response?
And he took the chicken's way out and called me at my dorm room. And did that, and didn't say who he was, but I could just tell from the way he treated me when I was around them, kind of who it was.
Okay.
And you know, at the, I guess I don't really remember my response. I just was
infuriated.
Yeah, and like I said, just taken aback. I just was like speechless.
Right.
Because I'd never. I went to a school when it was still a district school, and non-natives came to school. It wasn't just a it's a BIA school now, but it wasn't back then. And there were white kids and Indian kids, and we all got along, and, you know. So I'd never had to experience any of that. And I guess, and for a while, it kind of scarred me. But
like I said, first time.
Yep, my first taste of racism was when I went to college.
And so so you make it two quarters, two full quarters, and then flunk out on the third quarter. So then where did your journey go from there?
Well, you know, I called up my mom and dad, and I was crying, come get me. And my parents were pretty pretty understanding about it, although we kind of knew in our family that education, you know, it was either you work or you go to school, and it was more understood you go to school a little bit more. And I do come from a family that all of my siblings, except one, have graduated from college. I'm the only one with a master's degree, but my mother holds two master's degrees. You know, so my sister's a teacher up in Belcourt, a special ed teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, my aunt, before she passed away, was the deputy director of elementary education for the state.
Okay.
You know, so yeah, I come from a line of teachers, but I'm a social worker. I did come back, and I figured, well, I'm not in school, then it's work. So I did get my first job at United Tribes. I've actually worked at United Tribes three different times. This was my first one, but it was the one I think my first career choice was because I love to write. I've always loved to write.
Okay.
And I, when I was in NDSU, my major was communications and journalism.
Oh, okay.
And so my first job at United Tribes, they put me in the office, or the OPI, Office of Public Information.
Okay.
Under the great Harriet Skye.
Oh, really?
Who was my boss.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
And I learned so much from her. I learned how to write stories and edit them. I learned how to take pictures. We had a developing room back there. I would get all the newspapers and cut out articles. And what I did with those articles, Harriet eventually trusted me enough, because this is when she was doing Indian Country Today on KFYR.
Okay.
But we also had a 5-minute Indian news radio spot on KBMR. Mm-hmm. And she eventually trusted me enough to write my own copy. Mm-hmm. I'd go down on Friday afternoons and I'd record the 5-minute news spot. And they'd play it Sunday mornings.
Okay.
You know?
Wow.
So, I mean, I just was in my element when I was working there. I took pictures of the powwow winners. And at that time, we put out the United Tribes News, and there was really... no place they had contracted in Bismarck to print it, so I would take everything and drive to New Salem to drop off the printing.
Wow.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it. And the only reason I left that job was because the funding for my position ran out, so they moved me over to Security Dispatch.
Okay.
You know, which was another, because I grew up pretty sheltered.
Right.
You know, my folks didn't let... drunks come around or anything like that. And
mm-hmm.
when I was in dispatch, the things I saw, you know,
you
grew up real fast. I eventually, I would go to school and I'd quit and I'd go to school for a little bit up at Mary. And it actually took me 10 years to get my 4-year degree.
Oh, wow, okay.
And I think the reason that I actually dove in and finished was because I had a son.
Oh.
And it was do or die time, you know. You've got to figure this out and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose social work just because at the time he was little and I was getting caught up in the welfare system mm-hmm. and not being treated very well.
Right.
And I thought, well, you know, if I can be a social worker and make a difference and not treat people the way I have been treated,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was like they look down on you
mm-hmm.
for servicing you. It was... Yeah.
The workers themselves.
The workers themselves, yes.
Mm,
so, and that's why I changed. And it must have been God's calling that I help people in that way rather than through the written word, like I want it to go.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I've been doing it for 30 years.
Mm, goodness, that's so interesting to me because, you know, when somebody feels called to do something,
mm-hmm.
What were some clues? I mean, it's kind of like frustration and anger.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then people also used to say to me, you're such a good listener.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're such a good listener. So, I don't know. I think part of it, though, too, was before I had my son, I did get into a relationship with someone from back home.
Mm-hmm.
It lasted almost 5 years, and the 2.5 years into it were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to move home so I could be closer to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like he changed from day to night. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he became possessive.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a distance he couldn't control me, but once I moved home.
Mm-hmm.
And then for about the next 2 years, it was kind of hell.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a domestic violent relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And as grown up and as sheltered as I was,
mm-hmm.
you know, it kind of almost made me crazy in a way, because I was taking it, I was hiding it from my mom and dad, because my dad would have killed him. My dad, you know, never touched my mother. You know, he just believed you did not hit women, and
mm-hmm.
he would have. So I spent my time trying to hide I was being abused.
Mm-hmm.
And then my son was born into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I decided I was going to move back to Bismarck. And maybe I did it subconsciously to put that distance again.
Mm-hmm.
But we did eventually, under duress, kind of break up.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, played a huge part in my deciding to go for a social work degree, too. Because, again, it was helping people with
mm-hmm.
what I had been through.
Okay. Right. Okay. So you get your you go back to school then.
Yeah.
At this point, so you went 5 years, about 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that relationship was 5 years.
Oh, the relationship was about 5 years. Yeah.
Okay. So, at the end of the 5 years, and it separated you. You left.
Yeah. I left.
And it's a hard thing to do, right? It's almost like an addiction itself.
You know what? And here's the part with me anyway in this abusive relationship is, as long as it was just him and I, mm-hmm. I was taking it. But then my son got to be like about a year, year and a half, and I saw it affecting him. Mm-hmm. He had come down to stay for the week with us in my apartment, and he started accusing me of things, and we got into the parking lot down at Kirkwood, and he's screaming at me. My son is starting to cry and reach for him. He gets out and slams the door, and almost slams the door on my son's fingers.
Mm.
And I think there's just something inside of me that broke.
Mm.
And I was done. I knew it. I never looked back.
Mm-hmm.
I made a promise to myself. No one was ever going to treat me, you know, that way again. No one was ever going to touch me, and nobody ever has.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as it was me, I was taking it. But when I saw it affected my child, I was done. Mm-hmm. I was gone.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Strong woman. Because it's not easy.
No.
Those decisions are really hard. No, you get torn into, mm-hmm. and then people don't want to be alone. And,
yeah.
you know, just...
Although, you know, I met what was to become my best friend, my sister, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of was going through some things herself, and we just bonded. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of leaned on each other for support. Mm-hmm. We started going out, living our lives, doing mm-hmm. fun things, you know, raising our kids together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if there had to be a breakup, I probably did it at a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Had I been on my own, it might have been harder.
So you get me thinking now, like if there's somebody listening out there who's experiencing that right now, might be a victim of domestic violence. They have at least one child or more.
Mm-hmm.
Some have up to, you know, 5, 6 mm-hmm. children. But they're trying to do the right thing and leave. And so the vital needs are the very first steps that they need, shelter. And so it's very survival mode. But they have everything they need. Well, in that stage, well, what about the next step? I'm thinking, what about when they get their own place? You know, you mentioned friends. So friends mm-hmm. are probably the best way.
Friends.
Good, positive friends, strong friends.
Yes. Bismarck, back when I did, you know, was going through all of this, they were just beginning like services to abused women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's grown so much in the last 30, 35 years.
Okay.
At the time, and I did my senior year practicum in my social work degree. I did my senior placement with the Abused Adult Resource Center.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, it wasn't even called that. It was called the Abused Women's Resource Closet.
Mm-hmm.
And our office was above Sue Sporting Goods, which used to be a sporting store down in downtown Bismarck.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Oh. So we did not have any shelters. We
mm-hmm.
we had homes that
mm-hmm.
Families would take women and children in into their homes. That's
okay.
was how the sheltering was done until we got, you know, like Pam's house now and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many much better resources than back in my day. There is advocates.
Mm-hmm.
There are them to help you find education, to even clothe you, to give you
mm-hmm.
a career
mm-hmm.
Wardrobe. I
mm-hmm.
mean, there's so many things mm-hmm. that Abused Adult Resource Center does now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, your friends, your family.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, they even have connections. They've got this town wired.
They know how to get
furniture. They've got, you know, their food pantry. They to get a woman and her children set up and going on their own.
Mm.
You know, 30 years ago, they didn't have it this much. But and this all began in Bismarck, Mandan with the Bonnie Palachek.
Is that right?
She started the first services to women. And from what I understand, she started it in her basement.
Oh, my goodness.
But she is the first services of women that were being abused.
Oh.
was Bonnie's brainchild, kind of.
Wow.
To get help for them.
Mm.
This was probably the early 70s, I'm going to say.
Oh, my gosh. And I've seen her at a meeting here just like in the past year.
Mm-hmm.
So she's still strong.
Mm-hmm.
Involved. She, very much involved, even if it's behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that is just great. So you go through this, you come to Bismarck, and you go back to school.
Yep.
That's
and master's. I finish, you know, which was a glorious day. I finished 10 years after I graduated high school, but I finished.
Yeah.
And then my first job, I was the counselor at Theodore Jamerson Elementary School out at United Tribes.
Okay.
And I loved working with the kids. I was just kind of finding my element new into my career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son and I. And then I met my future husband out there.
Oh, out there. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, he'd come to deliver a... he's from Rosebud. He'd come to deliver a graduation address, and he had just finished his master's program at Ames, Iowa, University of Iowa,
okay.
And ended up staying. They offered him a job, and he ended up staying, and that's how we met out there, through mutual friends. So I was working at the school. I got engaged, got married, had my first daughter.
Okay.
You know, things were going pretty well. And then at the time, my the criteria for guidance counselors in schools changed, and I didn't meet the criteria.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have teaching certificates now and stuff to be a guidance counselor in school systems, and I didn't have that. So,
oh, I see. Okay.
So I went on to work with the Bismarck Public Schools after that, and I was their JOM coordinator for some years.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest accomplishment there was I was one of 10 JOM programs in the nation recognized for distinguished services, Bismarck Public Schools contracts our JOM program through the Standing Rock Education Department.
Okay.
And Bob Gipp was my boss down there, and he was thrilled when he called to tell me the program at Pierre had been selected. So that was, you know, a real honor. And from there, I kind of felt, I worked there another year or two after I won that award, but it's like I felt like I had taken the program as far as I could do it, and maybe it needed some new blood, you know, someone with maybe a different vision or something. So I started looking for another job, and I did land one with Casey Family Programs.
Okay. And what's that about?
That is long-term foster care.
Okay. I see.
Just short of adoption, but a lot of times when they take the foster, and it's kinship care, a lot of times when they take these children in, it's maybe to raise them until they're grown up. It's long-term foster care short of adoption, short of parental termination.
Mm-hmm. So is that run by the state?
No, Casey Family Program was founded by James Casey. James Casey is also the founder of the UPS system.
Really?
United Parcel Service, yes.
Oh,
out of Seattle, Washington.
Okay.
And he grew up with his dad had died young. He was the oldest of his brother and sister and his mother, and he had to quit school at an early age. And one of the jobs he took, he had a bike, and he would deliver messages and parcels around Seattle.
Oh, wow.
And that just kind of grew from there. But, yeah, the UPS system is where Casey Family Program got all their money.
So it was a nonprofit, though?
It's nonprofit,
and
yes.
Is it still exist here?
No. One thing that's always disappointed me is a lot of non-Native entities that come, you know, on reservations and all that, they come and offer all these services and say, well, we can do this for you, and a lot of times it's never seen through, and they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Casey came, that's kind of the exact promise that they said, we're here, we're not leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And they lasted here on our reservation, Fort Berthold, and then the Bismarck office did services to down on Standing Rock, too.
Okay.
They lasted 20 years here about.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep. And I came in kind of midpoint, so I did almost 10 years with Casey Family.
Okay.
I started out as their family developer, which means I recruited, trained, and retrained foster parents and retained them.
Mm.
After then, I took on more of a case aid position where you do more kind of social work stuff.
Mm.
With case managers, you kind of work hand in hand with them.
Okay.
In the meantime, I had my last child while I was at Casey.
Okay.
But I really did enjoy working with Casey, but for some reason, they pulled up stakes and they left, citing that they were going to put their... And UPS has given millions and millions and millions of dollars
mm-hmm.
to Casey. They mm-hmm. they have deep pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, they wanted to go in another direction, more into partnerships and collaborations,
mm-hmm.
and more into inner cities.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I felt that, you know, Native children just have as many problems
mm-hmm.
as inner city kids do, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they did. They pulled up stakes and did it quite abruptly.
Mm-hmm.
So there I was, left without a job and starting to go through a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, well, not a good time in my life.
Yeah.
Having to, you know, all of a sudden find a different place to live and
mm-hmm.
set up. And
so that kind of goes to a good point of why nonprofits are very valuable to our communities. Would you say the services that they provide
mm-hmm.
because life happens? I mean, you could be on a good road for years
mm-hmm.
and then something just like you say, a divorce or
right.
something traumatic can come along.
And a lot of people who are, you know, quote, unquote, making it
mm-hmm.
means living paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
You know, for them, they're making it.
Right.
And some don't even have it that good.
Right.
But so you could be one paycheck away.
Right.
From homelessness. No, you know, a broken down car can set you back.
Right. Because if you don't have the family who have the extra money to back you up,
mm-hmm.
then you're just out on
right.
your own.
Right. And I had a wonderful support system in my parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they
mm-hmm.
helped. I lived in an apartment for about 4 years with my two daughters before I was able to kind of scrape together a little bit of a down payment.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, my tribe had what they called the Dreamcatcher program at the time,
mm-hmm.
and that was assisting buying a home, and they had just opened it up statewide. Otherwise, it was just on our reservation, but they had opened it up statewide at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was given $10,000 to help with either the down payment or closing costs,
mm-hmm.
you know, however I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able, through the help of that Dreamcatcher program back home,
mm-hmm.
to purchase my first home all on my own.
Okay. And does it still exist today, this program?
They do have, since we've gotten oil money now, they
mm-hmm.
do have a mortgage company they formed back home. They don't call it Dreamcatcher anymore.
Mm.
It's just like a more tribal mortgage program.
Oh, okay.
And there's three different components to it. I don't know if it's all running, you know. There's a mortgage, you know, borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
There is updating and renovating. And there's refinancing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure, you know, what piece
mm-hmm.
is there to help.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard, which I am interested in and going to look into, is a piece, the renovation upkeep part of the program,
mm-hmm.
you know, for new windows and things like that, you know, because
mm-hmm.
those of us that live off the reservation, we, you know, not many reservations or tribes help those that leave,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a lot of us leave for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I left to go to school.
And then you stayed.
Yeah.
And why, can you share why you stayed after?
I think because I just felt more opportunity out here. My kids were in good schools. There were more activities for them. You know, for me, when I was growing up, it was in the back of the school, the basketball court. It was the main hangout place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here in Bismarck, my girls have been in gymnastics and,
mm-hmm.
you know, all different kinds of things growing up just for kicks. And
mm-hmm.
So there was more to expose them to.
Positive.
Positive things.
Yeah.
But that also comes with a price because then it puts you more at having to teach them their cultural ways, their our traditions. You know, back home, it's a collaborative effort. Because my true. Growing up, my dad's sisters were very traditional women, mm-hmm. and I learned so much from them. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't learn from them, my mom and dad taught me. Mm-hmm. You know, so...
That's so true. So it's almost like we have to choose. If you live back home, you'll have that access to the traditional ways. Mm-hmm. But if you decide for opportunity, so it's almost like, okay, tradition or economic mm-hmm. Values, mm-hmm. you know, and to live, like survive and be comfortable, mm-hmm. or to kind of go without a little bit more and mm-hmm. be okay with that, but you're in your traditional ways because mm-hmm. you're together collectively mm-hmm. with yeah. your tribe, yeah. not just your family.
Right.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I think the Native American Development Center wants to learn more about what are our attitudes towards economic opportunities today here locally to the Native Americans. We can assume that some are just looking for opportunities, but we don't always know why they come here. Mm-hmm. So... So thank you for sharing that. So it was your education, and it was the opportunities mm-hmm. for your kids.
Right.
And for yourself, for work, mm-hmm. would you say?
Yeah, because from working with the schools, I went on to, from Casey, I went on to, when that closed, then I did get a job with the Bismarck Public Schools again. I went back to work for them again. I worked in a 2-year day treatment program that they had going, and it only lasted 2 years, the funding for it, mm-hmm. But got to work in middle school with, you know, adolescents, mm-hmm. and some of them were Native, not all, but got to see how they struggle, mm-hmm. you know, how mm-hmm. they struggle up here, mm-hmm. you know, and... Day treatment is working with students with behavior problems, academic problems. So I saw, you know, students and adolescents that were already adjudicated to some point, had already been in court, already had a record, mm-hmm. you know, so mm-hmm. it can start early. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, we always think the reservation things happen bad and all that. It happens everywhere. It happens mm-hmm. up here too. Mm-hmm. And those were the students we were working with. Mm-hmm. In the midst of that, I decided to go back and get a master's degree. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think I chose, I never really wanted a master's in social work because to me that would be too limiting. Mm-hmm. So I did choose the master's in management from Mary, did it in their accelerated program. Mm-hmm. Because I felt with my social work background and ad management to that, it would open up more different kinds of mm-hmm. experiences. Mm-hmm. It kind of really hasn't, because okay. I stuck more with the social work type things.
Anyhow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I, in the middle of getting that, I bought my home and moved into it. Mm. Still there. Been there 7 years now.
Okay.
8 years, 7 years, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm... back at United Tribes in November, I'll be there 10 years. My third time there, but the longest time so far, 10 years this time. Not really sure what direction, you know, my life is going to go really now. Because now I'm at the point in my life, I'm starting to put my ducks in a row for retirement. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's strange to say because I don't see myself as being old. Uh-huh. But... let's just put it this way, I'm on the downside to 60. So, you know, you start thinking about putting those ducks in a row to yeah. get there.
Setting.
Yeah, and I want to be able to not have to work and enjoy my life, come and go as I please. I still have my mother, mm-hmm. she's still with mm-hmm. us, and I like to be able to spend time with her more. Mm-hmm. You know, we almost lost my sister out in Portland in January. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I'm going with my mom in June to go out there and visit her. And, you know, I just want to do things where I'm not tied down to having to work. So I'm trying, at this point in my life, putting, like I said, my ducks in a row so that retirement happens sooner than I had thought it would. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm at. But what I do at United Tribes, I do enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's working with adults. So in my 30-year career, I've worked with kids. I've worked with adolescents, I've worked with teenagers, young adults, now I'm working with adults seeking their education.
Mm-hmm. Higher education.
Yeah, their higher education. And that comes with a whole new set of problems for them, mm-hmm. for their families. We have our own daycare system out there. We have an elementary school out there, you know, so...
And so is it just Native American college students? Do you ever get non-Native?
Oh, yeah, we do.
Okay.
At tribal colleges, sometimes people think it's just for Native Americans, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Our doors are open to anybody who wants to come enroll in one of our vocations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are some popular vocations for non-Natives?
For non-Natives, mm-hmm. nursing, teacher education, criminal justice. You know, the teacher education, criminal justice are 4-year degrees now.
Oh, okay.
As is, we have a business department with a 4-year degree too.
Okay.
And we're working towards master's degrees. Not mm-hmm. there yet.
Yep. That's
but,
good. That's good. That's good news. And so, what would you say is so valuable about United Tribes in this community? Why is it so valuable?
I think not just because we're there to teach people, you know, mm-hmm. a profession, a career, but we probably also bear the responsibility of teaching the community as whole, because we want to be a part of it. And I think communities should know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to learn about them, and they need to learn about us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the first step in acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think right now we're at a point where it's tolerance. And I don't mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should just tolerate each other. We should accept each other for who we are.
Mm-hmm.
When I worked at the Bismarck Public Schools, I used to have a discussion group at the high school with my Native students there. Mm-hmm. And one thing I used to always tell them was, you know what, there are not many people who are full bloods anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there's not many of us that can say that. I said, so if you're not full blood, what other bloods do you have running through you? Do mm-hmm. any of you even know?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I said, I know I have English in me.
Mm-hmm.
I know I have German in me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and Welsh. I said, but you know what? My first identity is always going to be, I'm Native,
mm-hmm.
I'm an Indian, I'm Mandat, Hidatsa, Rikara, that's who I am.
Uh-huh.
But I think you cheat yourself a little when you don't know every blood that runs through you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so I'm going to challenge you. Go and try to find out what other bloods run through you and learn about that.
Because
mm-hmm. that's part of who you are, too. I said, you're not just Native, you're other things, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, open yourself up to learning about what other bloods run through you. So,
is great. Okay. That's great. You have such a really good background, just with people, the human social element that's vital for helping people.
Yeah, I think probably that's why God led me down this road rather than the one I was choosing.
Yeah.
Which is so, you know...
Right?
We can want plans. Everything we want. And I had a friend whose mother used to say, make all the plans you want. All the plans you want, just never plan outcomes.
Right.
You know?
I was thinking of that scene, go ahead and make plans if you want to make God laugh.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. He'll be
that.
Amused. You'll tickle his funny bone today.
So, okay, well, is there anything else that you wanted to share? You know, I guess I want to kind of leave the audience with tools to use in their hardships. I mean, you went through a time period of going through a divorce, single parent, looking for housing. Did you have transportation?
I did, you know,
did.
But with the help of my parents, I did.
Okay. Yeah, some don't always have that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we become very dependent on the organizations that exist in
mm-hmm.
our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And so all that work that they do out there, I think, is so great. I know today, it wasn't always there. It's a new organization. Just had coffee with them this morning. And they have a program, and I can't remember the name of it specifically, but they actually give away cars.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's limited and it's all dependent on how many cars are donated.
Right.
And so I think that's a really great program. I think, mm-hmm. I mean, we're just looking for the opportunity. It's not that our Native people are just sitting on a couch and not wanting to do anything. There's just, they don't have access all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't all grow up, you know, with that background of financial security. So we're breaking cycles today.
Mm-hmm.
We're becoming educated so that our kids can have mm-hmm. that, though. Mm-hmm. So the next generation will be a little bit better off. But I think we're in a cycle of today, in a generation of breaking cycles.
Yeah.
And I think the programming of financial literacy, I think, is going to be very help
get
us there.
Yeah.
It's huge. Mm-hmm. And so so I think working with the community would really, you know, really help
yeah.
the individual.
Don't be afraid, yeah, don't be afraid to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Learn to advocate for yourself in a good way, in a positive way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Get that ability, and you're not born with it.
Mm-hmm.
To look at a bigger picture,
mm-hmm.
always anticipate, and that you only can get from experience and practice. You know,
mm-hmm.
I do it pretty well now, but I've been doing it for years.
Mm-hmm.
I anticipate a lot of, well, this happens, this could happen. You know, view life with shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
The possibilities are endless. Don't be a black and white person
mm-hmm.
that you only see life in black and white. It's
mm-hmm.
either this or that because.
Mm-hmm.
There's the possibilities are endless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take those advantages, take those doors that are open to you
mm-hmm.
and make the most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And never be afraid. I think the bottom line is ask questions.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Anita. I really enjoyed this interview and thanks for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome.